He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I will trust. Surely He shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the perilous pestilence. He shall cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you shall take refuge. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid of the terror by night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that walk in darkness, nor the destruction that lay waste at noonday. 1,000 shall fall at your side, and 10,000 at your right side, but it shall not come near you. Only with your eyes shall you look and see the reward of the wicked. Because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your dwelling place, no evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near your dwelling. For He shall give His angels charge over you, to keep you in all your ways. In their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone. You shall tread upon the lion and the cobra, the young lion and the serpent, you shall trample underfoot. Because He has set His love upon me, therefore I will deliver him. I will set him on high, because he has known my name. He shall call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will dwell with him and honor him. With a long life, I will satisfy him and show him my salvation.
Thank you, Pastor Rob. You may be seated. You did a good job. Very good. Phenomenal chapter. Just remember, in times of trouble, 911, Psalms, 911. For the last 4 weeks, Rachel has been diligently researching and applying the knowledge that God has given her and gifted her with. And she's been speaking about how to save white America. Today is the fifth and final portion of her talk. And this morning she will be talking about the battle plan. So maybe the first song that we sang kind of ties it all together, doesn't it? Onward Christian Soldiers, the battle plan. So give your hearts and your attention to Rachel.
Thank you, David. As David mentioned, this is the fifth and final part of a five-part series titled How to Save White America. And then I know everyone is going to be overjoyed to have Pastor Rob back next week. For those who may not have been listening to some of the earlier messages I've been giving, Pastor Rob was out of town for a couple of weeks in Arizona, asked me to step in, and then that ended up going from a two-week message to a five-part message. So I know everybody will be glad to have Pastor Rob back next week. The first message that I gave as part of this five-part message was, number one, restoration of the family. We dealt with why the family have to be the focus of our plan to save white America. Number two was restoration of biblical manhood. Number three was restoration of authentic womanhood. Number four was reclaiming authority in the family as a means toward revival. And then this part this week is titled The Battle Plan. Now let me, before I get started, or as part of my message, I'm going to read a few things out of an article to you. Pastor Rob had mentioned this article also a couple of months ago, and he had a couple of excerpts out of it that he read. I'm going to quote a little bit more because I thought it was very pertinent to what I have to say today. This was the March 22nd issue of Time Magazine, 10 Ideas for the Next 10 Years. And let's see, one, two, three, four, the fifth bright idea for the next 10 years, or, well, I say bright, I don't know if it was a bright idea according to Time, but they've got the little light bulb up there. Anyway, was titled The White Anxiety Crisis. And I thought it was very important the way it ties into my message today, because it seems as if even Time Magazine is recognizing something that some of us have been saying for a number of years now. And really, although the article by Time Magazine tries to show this as something that's going to be a negative for our country, I find a lot of hope in it. So let me just begin reading here. I'm going to go down to the third paragraph. It says here, according to Time Magazine, as much as Americans pride themselves on the notion that their national identity is premised on a set of ideals rather than a single race, ethnicity, or religion, we all know that for most of our history, white supremacy was the law of the land. In every naturalization act from 1790 to 1952, Congress included language stating that the aspiring citizen should be a, quote, white person. Of course, Pastor Rob had done an extensive series back in the fall about America being a Christian nation, America being a white nation, and then its confused identity now. Let me continue on here. It says, and not surprisingly, despite the extraordinary progress of the past 50 years, the sense of white proprietorship, this is our country and our culture, still has not been completely eradicated, thank goodness. Even though we now have an African-American president, we still tend to treat minorities as parts and whites as representatives of the whole. This, along with the luxury of rarely feeling obliged to think self-consciously about one's racial background, has been one of the perks of belonging to the demographic majority. Now I'm going to stop it and comment on that one line right there where it says that part of the luxury of being white in America and part of the majority race has been that we have not had to think about ourselves as being white. We haven't really had to stop and consider our racial status in this country. And I would take issue with them saying that that is a luxury. It has actually been a game plan used against our people because, as Time Magazine said, black people, non-white people have been taught to think of themselves as parts. They're part of this nation. But white people have been taught to think of themselves as just European or white in the aspect that we take Black History Month or we take inventions and so-called different, you know, whatever accomplishments that some of the non-white races may have made. And they lump them all together in black or Asian or some other type ethnicity such as that, where they take white and they break us actually down into the parts. So actually it's the white people that are broken down into parts, into our different nationalities. And because of that, we have not been taught to think of ourselves as white. So it's not actually a luxury. It's actually been a game plan that they have used against our people to water down our racial identity. Let me continue here. It says, but according to the Census Bureau, by 2050, whites will be a minority group in the U.S. How the current majority reacts to its incipient minority status is the most crucial socio-demographic issue facing the country in the decade to come. The most obvious impact will be political. If California's demographic transformation is any indication, Anglos dropped below 50% of the population there in 2000, whites elsewhere may increasingly develop a stronger consciousness of their political interests as a group. I'm going to skip down here. It says, with so-called minorities outnumbering whites, mainstream politicians have been reluctant to endorse any initiative that would invite a backlash from non-whites. Let me skip on down more. It says, though whites will become a minority in the national population, the vast majority of individual states will probably remain majority white. And this, like I said, this is what we've been saying for many years now. It says, this is because the most profound demographic change is happening in a handful of the most heavily populated states. A strong white minority political consciousness is most likely to arise in regions that are nowhere near actually becoming majority minority. It is in these regions where white minority status is more phantom than reality. that politicians and their word demagogues can best employ the rhetoric of white ethno-nationalism. This won't take the form of a chest-thumping brand of white supremacy. Instead, we are likely to see the rise of a more defensive, aggrieved sense of white victimhood that strains the social contract and undermines collectively shared notions of the common good. I think that is, the article is just very, very prophetic in my mind. And what I thought was very interesting about it was how they talk about, you know, the regions of the country that are going to remain majority white. And we're looking at this happening now in our very, you know, our lives in these end times. We're seeing a majority population of non-whites take up in your coastal regions, and we're seeing almost like with the pilgrims, God driving his people inward to the center of the country to a more rural agrarian type of life. And I believe that is directly related to our battle plan to save white America. Let me read here from Revelation 18, beginning in verse 1. And after these things, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. Now let me stop and make a comment there. We hear people a lot of times talk about how we need to separate ourselves, we need to come out of the Babylonian system, we need to come out of that part of the world and separate ourselves. And that is something that I feel we really need to take at heart. We need to take to heart the concept that we have to separate ourselves from the current culture that we see that has risen up in this nation. What I would want to comment on is, in relation to that, where we have people who have this, they know what they need to do. They know that they need to make a geographic stand, I guess you could say, in defense of their family. In other words, they need to leave the Babylonian infested cities and these large metropolitan areas, but they find themselves very at odds with the concept of actually taking themselves out of that. It's almost as if they enjoy that hustle and bustle just too much. I'm reminded of Moses' wife when they left, you know, the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, and she turned around and looked back. And to me, that is related to a lot of our brothers and sisters nowadays, because they know there's so many good white nationalists, there's so many racially conscious people out there in America today, and we see them in a lot of your large urban areas, but they just find themselves so at odds with really tearing themselves away, making that real idea of splitting themselves off and leaving that lifestyle and that culture. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, they're living in an urban area or a large city area and that they're somehow involved in all of the sins of the city and of these big, you know, metropolitan areas. But again, it's that undercurrent of the city, of the hustle and the bustle and just that go, go, go. It's a lifestyle that people find themselves kind of addicted to, even if they know that they shouldn't be in that area. They find themselves just addicted to the lights and the, you know, just the go, go, go all the time. It's very, to me, I think it would be very addicting. And so a lot of people that I've spoke with, they talk about the need to get out. They talk about a need to return to the land, to return to a rural area, to return to an area where they are in a majority status. Perhaps they're in some city and they're, you know, counted down in the 10% of the population if they're, you know, right in the congested part of the city. Or if they're in a suburb, they might find themselves, you know, in the 40 or 50th percentile of the white population. And they talk about the need to leave that area and to get back to an area where they can raise family, where they can really put in some good grounded Christian roots and really be at a place where they can you know, kind of branch out and work for God, but they just find it so difficult. And I think it's not because, as some claim, that, well, they're going to stay behind and fight the good fight, and they're going to be the ones that are going to stand as the beacon when, you know, when Babylon falls. There may be a few that sincerely believe that way, but I think that for the most part, they just don't want to really make that break. They don't want to turn away from that city-type environment that is so enticing to people. And it reminds me of Moses. And I would just say to those people that you need to look inward in your heart, and you need to think and consider and ask God why you are not making a bold decision to separate yourself and get out of those areas for the safety of your family or your children, or to find a wife or a husband or a spouse, because how are you going to find one in an area that is at odds with Christ? And ask God why you're not making the decision to separate yourself out of that Babylonian order. Now let me continue on here. I'm going to move down to verse 8. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall utterly burn with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning, standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in one hour if thy judgment come. Now I wanted to mention those verses because in verse 8 it says the plague shall come in one day. And then when we move down to verse 10, it talks about how in one hour thy judgment is coming. Now I don't know exactly what that one day or when that one hour is going to be, and some people say that they know, you know, what that time frame of an hour or a day is, but I just know that to me this implies that it's going to be very quick. And the Bible talks about, you know, a thief coming in the night, and when they talk about that in relation to the rapture, they say, well, the thief is going to sneak in and it's going to, you know, be real quiet. But in the ancient days, that's not how thieves operated. They had like roving bands of robbers, and they just make a big hustle and bustle, and they'd move into the camp, and they'd be making all types of noise, and everybody would be caught off guard, and they'd all be woke up, and it'd be a big, loud event that was occurring. It wasn't something that was quiet. And so I just see here that, you know, we may not know when Babylon is going to fall, but we know that it's something that could catch people off guard. We know that it is something that is going to occur very quickly when it does come. And of course, the rest of the verses there, again, talk about the merchants suffering, all those people that relied on the present economic order, all those people who put all of their, you know, their riches and all their salvation and how much money that they could store up and materialistic things that they could accomplish in their lifetime. How all these great financial institutions and people that relied on them are going to be wailing and moaning for the fall of Babylon because, you know, it's taken away all their riches and their silver and their gold. Now, the first part of the battle plan is in Zephaniah 2:3, where it says, Seek ye the Lord, all ye meek of the earth, which have wrought his judgment. Seek righteousness, seek meekness. It may be ye shall be hid in the day of the Lord's anger. So the first thing that as a family, as a Christian family, that we need to do is that we need to ensure that we're seeking God's will at all times. Now, as I talked about in my other messages, with fathers and mothers, husbands and wives, that is something that we have to ensure that our family is being instructed on daily. We have to take a type of inventory of our family. We have to stop and consider, first off, if we're married or if we're single. If we're single, we need to stop and look at our lives and ask, what can we do to make us a person that someone else would want to partner with? There's a lot of single people in the movement who look towards partnership with other like-minded men and women, and then they come to the conclusion, well, there's just nobody out there. There's no women that believe like me, or maybe, you know, there's not as many guys that I would like to find that believe like me. I would say stop and examine your own life and find out what you can do to improve yourself, to make yourself a worthy partner for someone that God would perhaps bring into your life. Now, if you're married and if you have a family, then you need to stop and take inventory of your family. You need to stop and look at your sons and your daughters. Look at the knowledge they have of Scripture. Look at what they understand about the concepts of liberty and freedom. Look at what they understand about the concepts of their duty as a future mother or father. And then stop and consider whether they understand the racial issue and whether they understand that focus that it must have in their life. So stop and take inventory of your family and of your sons and your daughters and then of your marriage partners. The second part of defend your family, or the battle plan would be to defend your family. Now, part of that is geographic separation, as I mentioned. I believe that geographic separation is something that our people really need to begin to rely more upon. We have to stop thinking of ourselves as the last man standing in a neighborhood or in a city. There are some cities and some neighborhoods that white people just do not need to belong anymore. And fleeing the jurisdiction of an evil city or an evil despot is biblical. And so it needn't be something that people feel, you know, well, they weren't a man enough to, you know, to hold on to their neighborhood or something like that. They need to look into the future and think about the future safety of their family. And then they need to geographically separate themselves from areas that could be detrimental to their family in the future. Now, there are still many pockets of America that are majority white, and I would put that in the 90% white or better pocket. Now, I'm not going to give everyone here or those watching on the internet places that I think you should go and move. You're smart people, some people said here. Good job, Bob. But there are places on it, you can go, anybody can go on the internet, you can look up demographics, you can decide what part of the country that you think your family is being led to. Perhaps it's an area that maybe you're going to be the kind of the founding family of that area. Now, for the most part, I think families need to look and move to an area where there's already a good, racially conscious, grounded identity church. But there are not a lot of those out there. So God may be calling you and your family to begin planting the seeds in a new community. But when you're looking at a community or an area to move to, you need to look at areas that probably are not going to be sought after by aliens. It's going to be an area perhaps where there's not a lot of technological jobs, where there's not perhaps huge factories, huge corporations, areas where someone who has an entrepreneurial spirit could thrive, some place where you could have a cottage industry or a service type industry, a place where we're not going to have to worry about, you know, the pension and so forth, because you're not going to be a part of that whole type of lifestyle where you just, you know, you're grounded through this whole corporate type employment track. You need to look for areas where you can use, you know, the brain that God gave you to find that little part of the economic livelihood in your area that you can really use to the best of your family's betterment. Now, part of that economic betterment is to teach your children how to provide for themselves in the future. Now, sons, I believe, need to be instructed and helped from an early age up to look towards an occupation or something of some sort that they can thrive in, that again they can be more self-sufficient to their family. And then daughters, they need to look for how they're going to take care of the provisions that their husband has provided for the family. Are they going to be able to find themselves in a situation where they can, you know, learn to garden, where they can put food up, where they can look after the medical care of their family? I think a good general education and health and nursing and some sort of a medical background would be excellent for women to get into. We don't understand or know everything that may happen to our people in the future. I just know that God is calling our people to get out of the cities, move to the countries, become self-sufficient to the best of your ability, and kind of have your ducks in a row. Have people in your area, in your spiritual community, that perhaps represent different areas or different avenues of some sort of service that you may rely on in the future as a community. And healthcare, I think, is something very important. I would say in the past, I would say maybe perhaps the educational field or teaching, But, you know, unless you go into that field with a very strong deterrent not to get involved in the humanist teachings that they're going to try to put upon you, I would say the best thing would do would just to self-educate yourself. Self-educate yourself, take your kids out of public school, if at all possible, and teach them at home and work with them so that they can be self-sufficient in the future. Now in Isaiah 5:8 it says, "Woe unto them that join house to house, that lay field to field, till there be no place, that they may be placed alone in the midst of the earth." And again, I think that's very prophetic, because we find ourselves and so many of our brothers and sisters in such impossible areas. I know that there are a lot of people that just are, I mean, they're literally just dying to try to get out of these cesspools that they're living in. And I hope that God can help them find a way to do that. Some people, it's going to take longer than for other people. But I believe the Bible is clear in that we do not need to set our house to house and build up these kind of like towers of Babel in the middle of our country to where there's no land left for families to take care of their children and their own on. Now, if we look at family as being government and we look at family as being kingdom, then every kingdom needs a piece of land. You have to have something to govern. Now, if you're living in a city, you've got your house and you've got your children. But I believe that part of the dominion mandate is to get that little piece of land. I mean, even if it's a half acre, if it's an acre. So I would say to my white brothers and sisters out there, part of the battle plan would be to geographically separate, get yourselves out of the cities, find a little piece of land, and begin looking toward the future. Now, when you find an area in which to settle, when you're looking at the characteristics of a place to settle, aside from it being white, you also need to check the gun laws in your area. Don't go and move into an area where you have such liberalism that they are going to be attacking your gun rights, God-given gun rights, every single day. Now, I saw the movie Iron Man yesterday, and he made a comment I thought was kind of pertinent today. He said Iron Man had this little, you know, I don't know who knows what Iron Man is, but he made like a robotic type of armor type of suit that he had. But he said national defense has become privatized. And of course, you know, everybody there was all, oh no, you know, not national defense being privatized. But I actually thought that was quite true, because, you know, our first line of defense for the nation is the private use of arms and weapons. And so you need to take that in consideration when you're looking for an area to live, is what are the gun laws like in that area? Are you going to be hounded all the time because you're trying to, you know, take hold of your God-given right to defend yourself? And you need to teach your children how to defend their homes, how to defend their persons. You need to make sure they understand that dominion mandate of defend themselves, defending their families, their children, and their land and their homes. And then if at all possible, again, as I said during the Mother's Day message, is moms need to come home. Now, I know it's not possible for all moms to come home, but I there's so many, you know, from the healthcare problems to obesity to the education problems to just so many problems in society, I believe would have such a fix to it if moms were able to come home and take control of those houses again and be there to instruct their children and take care of their children and teach them how to be good citizens. So I would say in part of that battle plan is for moms to come home if at all possible. And that includes if your family have to go on food stamps or receive public assistance. I mean, we're giving it to black families and Mexican families. I believe take from Babylon what you can take and use it to the benefit of your family. Now in Jeremiah 29:5-7, let me read here. It says, when Israel was in Babylonian captivity, now quote, build ye houses and dwell in them and plant gardens and eat the fruit of them. Take ye wives and beget sons and daughters and take wives for your sons and give your daughters to husbands that they may bear sons and daughters, that ye may be increased there and not diminished. And seek the peace of the city, whether I have caused you to be carried away captives, and pray unto the Lord for it, for in the peace thereof ye shall have peace. Now, again, it's not referring to moving to cities and having peace in the city environment, but it's talking about Babylon, the city, that Babylonian order that we find ourselves in this day and age, that Babylonian captivity. And Jeremiah is saying there to go and build homes, marry, have children, plant gardens, take care of yourself, use the things of Babylon that you can use to benefit the glory of God's people. And then it says there to seek the peace of the city. And that means to be good citizens. That means to get involved in the political process in your city. Go to a white area. Work on your committees that are formed to stop illegal immigration. Work on your committees and political organizations that are there to help cement states' rights or freedom of speech for good Christian people. And again, I know that there's, you know, controversy over, you know, whether we need to have God's law or constitutional law, and we're not going to get into that today. But being a good citizen means getting involved and being a beacon and a light to God's people and to his brothers and our brothers and sisters, to his sons and daughters. And so whatever we want to think about as far as constitutional law, we have to get involved in the process. As our founding fathers did, they got involved in the process. They sought to have peace in the city, and by doing so, they worked to help our people understand the racial consciousness by, as Time Magazine stated, ensuring that citizenship was only for white people, and that freedom of speech and freedom and right to jury were for Christian people in this country. And so I would say that part of that is to become involved in the political process. Now I'm almost done. I'm going to go over about 6 or 7 minutes here. Let me continue into Matthew 24, 14 through 22. It says, "And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place, then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him take which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe unto them that are with child and to them that give suck in those days. But pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no one nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should be no flesh saved, but for the elect's sake those days shall be shortened." Now I'm going to comment on verse 17. "Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house, nor let him which is in the field return." I believe, again, that is saying those people that are in these city areas, and I just can't stress enough that people have got to get out of these areas. They are swarming in like flies into these areas, and our people are going to be stuck like little flies on flypaper. They need to get out of these areas. It says, "Don't even come down out of the housetop." I think that's referring to people who are in situations where they say, "Well, I've got 10 years until retirement. I can't leave now. It's going to hurt me financially." Again, and Pastor Rob has spoken on this so many times, again, are you going to leave yourself in a situation where you're going to stay in a city for that pension to be a part of that Babylonian financial system, and then your wife and you are going to flee the Sodom and Gomorrah, move out to the countryside, out to the mountains, and then your kids are going to be stuck there and left in hell? So again, I believe that verse is referring to don't let anything impede you. Get on with it, get out, get on with it, and get to the mountains, get to the rural areas. Now, back to Jeremiah. Again, I believe it's a call to be a good citizen. I think what Time Magazine, when they spoke of about the white supremacist type, that loud kind of beating on your chest, white supremacy, they said, which is not going to be part of these new political parties that wake up and help reignite the racial ethnicity of people in the heartland. I believe that is what we have been saying all along, which comes full circle back to the fact that our white nationalist movement, our causes, our organizations, Everything has got to be focused on the family, because when we have lose that family focus, that's when we get that real white supremacist type, you know, we're big and bad and we can scare you type philosophy. And that is not what is going to help move our families into an area that they can thrive and prosper. It is not what is going to bring women and children back into a condition in which they want to be a part of this revival in our country. So I believe that Time Magazine, again, was right on target with that. And that is what we've been saying all along. We've got to make the family a part of it. We have to make the family the central focus. The families have to get out, they have to prepare, they have to look individually at each part of their family relationships, they have to decide what family members they have to separate from, what jobs or employment do they have to separate from, what churches you have to separate from. And then part of this is we have to create a counterculture. Now, counterculture is something that is counter to the dominant culture. And it's kind of like, you know, we're told by the Bible to be separate and to stand apart, but we're also told to find peace in the city, to be involved in the process. And that comes about towards the building of a counterculture, which means we do exactly what we're trying to do in this area and what people are trying to do in other areas. You create a community. You revolve yourselves around a church. If there's not a church there, then get on the internet. Take your family to internet church. Build a church in your home, but focus your community, your counterculture, around a good, racialist, believing, good identity church. And if there isn't one, like I said, the internet, or do it yourself. And then grow up that community and be that beacon, not in the city, but be a beacon in the holy hills and mountains and habitations in those rural areas in the heartland of America. Be that beacon that can be a magnet to other white Christian families that can come. And you can grow that counterculture while at the same time being involved in the community, being involved in the political process, be involved in forming political parties and doing what you can to help awaken people and to help, you know, promote that white Christian revival and be a beacon to all those people out there that don't really understand what's going on yet. And that's what I feel that God is calling us to do, is to create a counterculture in the heartland of America. I believe that is the battle plan for our families. But in order for our families to enact on a battle plan, they have to first take inventory of themselves, both men and women, with your children, with the movements and associations that you're involved with, and make sure it's Christ-oriented and that you have all of your, you know, everything that you're trying to do, just make sure that it's out of the right motivation. Make sure that you're doing it out of the motivation of love for your people and honor for your family and in reverence and fear and awe of the Lord Almighty. So I will conclude with that. If everyone bow their head, I just want to thank you, Heavenly Father, again for another opportunity to share with my brothers and sisters here. I would hope that you will look out for my brothers and sisters out there that find themselves in impossible situation, perhaps for some reason unbeknown to us. They're unable to get out of these cesspools. But I ask that those families that they really consider why they are not taking the leading of the Lord and moving their families into a place of safety. I ask that you will come upon these families, that you will help guide them and show them a way towards the building of new communities, towards a building up of new churches, a planting of new churches, all with a focus on our relationship with you, all on a focus of our relationship as your sons and daughters, and never lose fact of that Abrahamic covenant of our race, their race, and our faith must come absolutely first before everything, and that out of that we can build up new, strong Christian communities, that we can stand in the evil day, and that as God showed the prophet Ezekiel, that the dry bones can live again. I ask this in all your holy and precious name, in Jesus Christ, amen. Okay, we have song 1.